Drive Time on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Zurich. Be future ready with a pension powered by Zurich's award-winning investment performance.
Now we're continuing our series on climate change and the challenges that we're all facing. And I'm joined once again by our correspondent, Katie Hannan. Today, Katie, you're looking at the transport sector.
Yes, Mary, and it's another big ticket item. It accounted for one-fifth of Ireland's greenhouse gases in 2017. Now, that share of our overall emissions is in line with the EU as a whole, but our carbon intensity in transport is well above the EU average. We emit 40% more carbon per head of population. And one of the reasons for that, of course, is because we've such a low population density and poor public transport options for people in rural Ireland in particular. And we also have a very high dependence on fossil fuels in this sector. 96.7% of our transport energy comes from fossil fuels. Carl Purcell is Programme Manager of the Behavioural Economics Unit in the Sustainable Energy Association of Ireland. He says that transport is an area in which small individual changes can have a major impact.
One of the greatest areas where we can all play a little bit more of a role in terms of reducing our emissions is transport. I think in energy saving, it really goes kind of, you know, can you do it without any sort of motorised vehicle assistance? So can you walk or can you cycle? If you can't do those things, can you do something like take public transport? So can you take the bus or can you take a train or a light tram? And then I guess if you have a longer commute, I would definitely implore you to look at getting an electric vehicle or even a plug-in hybrid, because the savings are the biggest when you drive a longer distance, right? So if you're commuting 40 or 50 kilometres each day to work, so your savings are likely to be the biggest because you're driving that extra distance. You're saving so much more fuel. So I'd really implore people to go on to drivingelectric.ie and look at the options that are available to them there.
So that's Carl Purnell from the SEAI calling on commuters who have to use cars or want to use cars, go electric. But Katie, what does the Climate Action Plan say about transport?
It says that the most efficient roadmap for Ireland would include a 45 to 50% reduction in transport emissions by 2030. Now, the section on transport in the Climate Action Plan features a lovely picture of cyclists on its cover, but what jumps out of you when you get into it is the huge emphasis in this plan is placing on shifting people from petrol and diesel cars to electric vehicles. It says that by 2030, there will be 840,000 passenger electric vehicles on Irish roads. It also talks about having 95,000 electric vans and trucks on the road by 2030. That for vans and trucks is five times what's in the National Development Plan. These are stunning targets, Mary. Almost 1 million electric vehicles in total. To be honest, I haven't met anyone who really believes this is achievable.
Yeah, I mean, they are stunning. It's aspirational. But does the plan know how it's going to be achieved? Or does it believe it's going to be achieved?
Well, it sets out what is basically a carrot and stick approach. So there will be much more incentives there to make electric cars cheaper to buy, cheaper to run. And then, of course, we're going to be facing into carbon taxes, which will make diesel and petrol cars more expensive to run. And ultimately, it will be impossible to buy those cars. No new non-zero emission vehicles will be sold in Ireland post 2030, and no NCT certs will be issued for these cars post 2045. And there are also commitments in the plan for building out of a charging network for electric vehicles.
Now, how are we getting on so far? Are there many electric vehicles on the roads as it stands in 2019?
Well, go back to 2008, the government said we would have 10% of the car fleet, that would be over 200,000 cars, would be electric by 2020. This was revised down to 50,000 in 2014. In 2017, they said actually it's probably going to be closer to 20,000. Actually, we're even nowhere near that figure.
And we started with 230,000. That was the
aspiration for next year. Now, at the start of this year, there were 4,825 electric vehicle cars in Ireland. The numbers are going up and going up very sharply. There was something, a 470% increase at the start of this year, 1,400 electric cars registered in the first quarter. So I spoke to Simon Acton, who he's the chairman of the Irish Electric Vehicle Owners Association. He recently left a career in IT to start a business called Next Eco Car. He's selling second-hand electric cars. So there's actually a market now for second-hand electric cars. He took me for a test drive in a Nissan Leaf, which is by far the most popular electric car on the road here at present, probably because it is one of the most affordable models. But even at that, a new Nissan Leaf would set you back €30,000 or thereabouts. And that's after the €10,000 you would save on the reduced VRT and the €5,000 grant you get from the SEAI. Simon says you could pick up a second-hand Leaf for about €10,000. But with the price of electric vehicle batteries falling in recent years, there's no doubt these cars will become more affordable. But I wondered, I asked Simon, what his typical customer profile is.
He says the majority of people are actually people that are very wise with their money. And people that are actually looking to save money on their motoring. And that's a huge motivator to people at the moment. You're effectively paying probably a quarter less for your fuel when it comes to the end of the day. In fact, if you charged in public all the time at the moment, it'd be completely free. But, for example, with this car, I charge it overnight, and it costs me about €2. So that's €2 to go 120 kilometres. And if you think about how much fuel you'd put in a normal car to travel that same distance, probably works out about a quarter of the cost, at least. There's then your road tax, which is the lowest rate for a fully electric car, so €120. Your maintenance on electric cars is also an awful lot cheaper because they're less complex and there are less moving components, so less things wear out. If you drive an electric car and you're on tolled roads, you also get a reduction in that up to 75% outside of rush hour. So that's a big benefit if you do a lot of motorway mileage.
And you get to feel good about yourself.
You do. You forget to feel very righteous about yourself.
Simon, action there. But Katie, are these electric vehicles the answer to our transport emissions problems?
Well, they will certainly contribute to lowering our transport emissions, but these targets are seen as wildly ambitious. And there are also, of course, serious environmental and resource concerns and human rights concerns about lithium batteries that go into these cars. But, of course, and also all these electric vehicles will require roads to drive on. So environmental scientists and commentators say we're falling well short of the sort of modal shift that is required. Here's Cara Augustenborg, who's a UCD fellow in environmental policy.
There were a few mentions in the climate plan on the need for modal shift and a brief mention of creating a cycling officer within the transport department. And I think that's promising, though I think one person is going to have a really hard time convincing the rest of the transport department to uptake cycling infrastructure to a greater degree. What a lot of the civil society organizations have been campaigning for is a prioritization on budget to say we will fund, 10% of our transport budget will go towards cycling. And there's been a huge resistance on the part of the government to commit to that kind of budgetary change, which is unfortunate because unless we make that kind of prioritization in our budget, which is not a huge significant change, really, 10% of the budget going to cycling, without that, then the money isn't there to build this kind of infrastructure at the scale we need to do it.
So Cara was talking about cycling there, Mary, and there is a section in this plan on cycling, but it's skimpy enough and the language in it is, I have to say, less than dynamic. It talks about establishing a cycling project office. This office will publish a five-year strategy. This strategy will consider developing an overall cycling implementation plan for across all the cities. So it's pretty vague. iBike Dublin is a community of cyclists campaigning for safer cycling infrastructure in the city. They occasionally hold demos where cyclists park their bikes on the traffic side of cycling to protect the lane and to highlight how frequently cycle lanes are ignored by other traffic on the road. So I talked to some iBike members as they protected the cycle lane on Westland Row in Dublin city centre on one recent very busy damp rush hour evening. And as we were standing there, a van parked on the cycle lane a little away from us. Kieran Ferry explained why this could be very dangerous for cyclists and why we need the government to act on the plans that are already in place.
Well, if someone is parked on a cycle lane in front of you, you've got to obviously come out into the main line of traffic and get around them. And quite often, we've got a number of buses coming down the road here. You know, you could end up getting squeezed between buses and parked cars. And then you've got the risk of somebody opening the door of the parked car and knocking you off the bike. So it is a very dangerous thing to do. And you're right, a lot of people don't realise that. A lot of people think, OK, here's a handy place for me to pull in and park. I'm just going to be dropping in here for a minute. But in that minute, you could have 30 or 40 people cycling past you. So, you know, it is a big issue. Unfortunately, the enforcement of it isn't particularly well done.
Is it enforced at all?
Intermittently it is enforced, but not to any great degree, and there seems to be some confusion as to whose responsibility it is, whether it's the guards or whether it's Dublin City Council's Dublin Street Parking Services, and there really isn't any serious attempt to curb the behaviour. In actual fact, we have very good policy. It's just that it's not been implemented. We have, in 2013, there was the Greater Dublin Area Cycling Network Plan, which was published and promised 2,800 kilometres of cycle lane in the Greater Dublin Area. We also have the Design Manual for Urban Roads and Streets, which prioritises walking over other modes of transport and has a hierarchy of walking, cycling, public transport and then private cars. But unfortunately, what you see here in front of us is that there's a road here which has two lanes dedicated for private cars. There's one part-time bus lane in one direction, and there's one part-time cycle lane in the other direction, which is, as you can see here, has people parking on it. And the footpaths here, I mean, we're right next to Pier Street Station, one of the busiest commuter stations in the city, and that generates a lot of pedestrian traffic. And you can see even now, just coming up to 5 o'clock, that the pedestrian traffic is quite heavy here. You will see in a little while that people will start to walk out onto the cycle lane because there's so many people on the footpath. So we need to really flip all that, and we need to prioritise the most efficient modes of transport. So we need to prioritise people walking, people cycling, and people using public transport. And unfortunately, that's going to mean reducing space on the road for private cars. And that's really the only way that we can reduce congestion in the city and make the city safer for people cycling, and respond to the issues we have about pollution and emissions.
Kieran Ferry there on cycling. What about public transport, Katie?
Well, again, Mary, the plan is pretty light in detail when it comes to public transport. Of course, they turned up for the launch of this on a hybrid bus. We only have three of those hybrid buses. Across Europe, the plan describes how 12 major cities have signed up to a fossil fuel-free street declaration, pledging to buy only electric buses from 2025. By comparison, our pledge to procure 1,200 low-emission buses for public transport in cities and to increase the biofuel blend rate for buses, it's a bit underwhelming.
And road haulage. What about road haulage?
Well, again, if the plan is light on cycling targets and public transport, a road haulage barely gets a look in. And it is a major emitter of greenhouse gases. The plan states we shall develop a strategy for heavy freight, and then refers to delivering 14 public gas fueling stations and a grant scheme to support 74 gas-fueled vehicles. But Verona Murphy of the Irish Road Haulers Association says that gas engines don't make sense for most of her members. She says the most clean green engine currently available for road haulers is the Euro 6 diesel engine, but she says these come at a price and hauliers will need grants to make the switch.
We are on such low profit margins, Katie, that we absolutely have to have assistance. We're not going to, without a shadow of a doubt now, we're not going to be able to face Brexit. Even in a proper managed Brexit, we have come down to profit margins of 2 and 3%. Hauliers can't afford to upgrade their trucks without assistance. It is quite simple. Our fuel rebate system needs to reflect that. The government needs, we need an injection. We need an injection of confidence, and that can be managed through the fuel rebate in order to bring it up to the Euro 6 level.
How much are we talking about here?
46 million, if it was in its entirety. But we have to be conscious from the government's own climate plan. We have to be very conscious of the commercial sensibilities of a washout period. You cannot just say we're going to have a million electric cars in 10 years' time. There's perfectly viable diesel models out there with petrol models. You know, they can't be just come worthless overnight. Trucks can't either. You've got to have a washout period. You've got to think it through. This can't be rushed.
But there'll be plenty that will say, we have to be in a hurry. This is an emergency. The house is on fire.
No, there needs to be an understanding that what is available to us, the cleanest engine currently that doesn't cost any more to infrastructure, is the Euro 6 diesel engine. We've all heard that the EU, Ireland included, intends to have fossil fuels eradicated by 2050. That is something that I find it's unreal. It's not practical. And what it means is we sign up to deadlines that make us pay large amounts of money in the billions in fines because we can't meet those targets.
So that's road haulage. Let's talk aviation.
Well, since 2012, aviation greenhouse gas emissions, they aren't actually counted in our national emissions. Airlines receive tradable allowances covering a certain level of emissions from their flights per year, and then they must buy allowances to cover any shortfall between what they actually emit. And this is going to become more onerous. There's going to be a new system in place by 2021. But aviation is still a relatively small amount of our emissions, probably around 6%, but it is growing at an exceptionally rapid pace. And of course, we have just recently given grant aid to Waterford Regional Airport to develop a longer runway to attract business in there, and Dublin Airport is going to get another runway. Here's John Gibbons, who is the author of the Think or Swim blog on environmental issues.
A return trip from, say, Dublin to New York, you're looking basically at probably about 2 tonnes of carbon dioxide per passenger on that plane. That's equivalent, really, to a year of driving your car. That's one return trip to New York. And of course, our pricing is all wrong. We don't, for example, charge any VAT or duty on aviation kerosene. We don't charge VAT on airline tickets. So essentially, the aviation sector is the biggest free rider in the entire global economy. And people know this instinctively. It costs more to get a train from Dublin to Cork than it does in many cases to fly on an airplane from Dublin to Malaga. Now, common sense says, that's crazy. How do they do it? Incredible tax breaks on the most expensive component of aviation is energy. We cannot continue flying the way we've flown in the past, and even the idea of expanding our aviation footprint over the next 20 to 30 years. Science says we can't do this, yet we have a government policy that says, well, actually, we're not that interested in science, we're going to do it anyway. We're baking in infrastructure that we're going to continue to use and have to use for the next 20 and 30 years. So essentially, you can have aviation expansion or you can have a stable climate, but you can't have both.
And that was John Gibbons there, ending Katie's report on climate change today and transport tomorrow. Not tomorrow, Friday, in fact. Katie is back again with her third and final piece. She'll be looking at the energy sector.